This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people. We acknowledge them as traditional owners and pay respects to elders past and present.
So, Dale, in our first episode, we covered a fair few decades up to 2014.
Yes, from the Second World War to SBS being set up and then the growing love Australia had for Eurovision.
In this episode, we're going to focus on two of the most pivotal years in Australia's Eurovision journey.
We're going to look back at 2015 and 2016, including how we got there and how important it was for us to succeed.
We'll hear from some familiar voices as well as an Australian Eurovision legend.
I'm Dale Roberts.
I'm Mike Jones. And welcome to the second episode of Why is Australia in Eurovision?
Jessica Mauboy has just been an interval act in Copenhagen, and the momentum is building for Australia at the contest.
Paul Clark from Blink TV, the man behind the scenes from our first episode, explains how important that performance was.
When we were invited onto the stage in Denmark, that was a big deal. The fact that Jess Mauboy was going to be performing in front of hundreds of millions of people, that was a really big breakthrough. I remember when she performed, Jon Olav, who was then the executive director of Eurovision, came over and he said to me, "Oh, Paul, she is fantastic. She's like a pocket Tina Turner." So they were building their excitement. In the middle of this, they're watching us do our commentary and our TV performances from the commentator's booth. They were really loving Sam and Julia, and it was building.
That name, Jon Olav Sand, is an important one to note in Australia's Eurovision journey. You may know him from his famous catchphrase.
Jon Olav, before we get to that result, we need to hear from you those three magic words that make every Eurovision broadcast. Can you do it for us?
Give me your mic.
Oh! Okay. Take it away.
Jon Olav was the executive supervisor of the contest between 2011 and 2019, and he'd uttered those famous words to announce the start of the results every year.
He was the man, and getting his support was absolutely critical. Here's Paul again.
It's a really interesting thing to have a dream and to work with people who are so open that they can see what you might do and be excited by it and open the door. And that's ultimately Jon Olav did that. Like, he took quite a risk by inviting Australia into it. But gradually that door opened through each of those little tests, and each time it just felt like we were getting closer. We did a corporate presentation about what it could be and how we could be relied upon to carry the brand and our end of the world. I think Michael was a wonderful ambassador for SBS. He's just the most gracious, generous spirit. And there was incredible trust that he would deliver on his end. And my job, in terms of creativity, we'd just come off all these big shows. So there was really trust in what we could do. We had Stephanie as a head of production. You know, she'd worked at the Olympics and the Commonwealth Games. She's an incredible logistic organizer. So every time that she dealt with the EBU, they felt very comfortable with her. And she had a public service background. And they could sense that we were powerful in what they needed as well, and that we wouldn't let them down. There was a sense of trust that we would do something really exciting and shake things up. And I think it was a really good moment for the EBU to do that. So with his whole team, they really were interested in the whole concept of good evening, Europe, good morning, Australia, and just sensing the silliness of that.
It really does sound like it was almost the perfect storm for Australia.
For sure. The EBU wanted to expand. SBS under Michael Ebed had the right people. And Australia had this hunger to be part of it.
And also, timing was on our side.
The Austrians invited us in to talk they said, look, it's a 60th birthday and it's our right to be able to invite whoever we want as a performer, and we'd like to invite you as a wild card. So it was a big deal. Obviously, there was a lot of conjecture. There's so many competing forces and debates within the Eurovision world.
It wasn't just in the Eurovision world. The average Australian couldn't quite get their head around it also.
The big news of the day is, of course, Australia will contest the next Eurovision Song Contest. Amazing stuff. I couldn't believe the news this morning, and this guy refused to believe the news this morning.
That surprises me.
Why?
I would have thought Eurovision would be about countries in Europe, so it sounds a bit strange to me. So I feel like this is a bit of a piss take right now.
Dr. Jess from the first episode talks about how that invitation was a little odd.
When Australia entered Eurovision, it was a really interesting time for me personally and professionally because I had only just started doing my research into Eurovision. And what I was interested in at that time was, why do we as Australians love Eurovision so much? And then suddenly it's announced that Australia is part of Eurovision. And there was this idea of, like, initially my research seemed so left of field, like such an esoteric thing to be concerned with. And then now we're part of it. And it wasn't just about understanding why we liked it. The question changed into understanding, how on earth could we be part of this? I'm all for it, but how can we be part of this?
Now, this kind of takes us back to where we started this entire podcast.
After all these decades, Australia is officially going to compete in Eurovision. Somehow, SBS has pulled it off, even if it was for just a one-off wildcard appearance for the 60th anniversary.
Yeah, how handy was it to have that anniversary as an excuse to let us in? We've finally been given a chance. The pressure is now on.
Now the big question. Who's going to fly the flag for Australia in Vienna?
Please welcome the artist representing Australia at this year's Eurovision Song Contest, the fabulous Guy Sebastian.
I remember ringing the head of Sony here and saying I'd love it to be Guy Sebastian if he would do it. And we had a meeting and Guy said, I really want to do it. I just don't want to come last. And the head of Sony looked at me and he said, Paul, if he comes last, there's a horse's head in your bed.
Wow, sounds like we were really taking it very seriously. I mean, we were willing to murder a horse.
True. Well, look, getting Guy Sebastian was obviously huge. He'd won the first Australian Idol back in 2003 and forged a successful career. He really was our biggest and most loved artist at the time. You were quite a fan of the choice as well, weren't you, Mike?
Well, initially, I had my reservations, Dale.
Yeah, we dug up one of your old tweets. And what did it say again?
Well, my tweet said, we finally get a chance to send someone to Eurovision and we pick Guy Sebastian. First reaction, yawn. It's not as if I didn't like Guy Sebastian. It's just I thought maybe he was a bit of a safe choice. I have to say, as soon as I heard the song, I well and truly changed my mind. Do what you want. Oh, get on it, ooh, get on it. I don't
want tomorrow. Oh, baby, tonight's so good. The only name on everybody's lips here is Guy Sebastian, Australia's inaugural Eurovision entrant. And as we discovered, he has no shortage of admirers.
This Aussie army of Guy groupies enjoying Eurovision euphoria.
My life is complete now. I had it made specifically for this event. I don't usually do dress up, so this is pretty important.
Guy's got that, you know, groove about him. He's going to, you know, show that Australia is a multicultural place, and he's going to bring something different, and he's going to show the Europeans how to do Eurovision properly.
Well, yes, Dale, Eurovision fever definitely hit me as well. I went absolutely nuts listening to all the songs, analysing them all, rating them up against Guy, so certainly went to another level for me.
Yeah, it totally changed things. Being a competitor made us kind of listen to those songs in a very different way because they were our competition now. And also, another great part of that week was getting up at 5 a.m. and watching those semi-finals legitimately for the first time.
Yes, previously, if you wanted to watch the live shows in Australia, you had to get, well, a little creative, shall we say, Dale. Plus also, we got to vote in all the shows for the first time.
But it was all about that Sunday morning for us here in Australia, getting to watch Australia compete. Guy Sebastian up there on stage was incredible. I had a huge party at my house. I'd managed to pick up this SBS Eurovision Australia sash off the ground at Mardi Gras that year. Don't ask any questions. But I had that sash on, I had the big party, and I remember when Guy started performing, I sat right at the front, right in front of the TV, and I just pretty much cried the entire time. It was a very special moment. I couldn't believe we were actually competing, and he did such a great job.
Yes, and for me, it happened to be the morning after my birthday, so I stayed up all night, had quite a big celebration, and just watching Guy and hearing him get those 12 points was something I never thought I'd ever see.
And finally, 12 points to Australia.
L'Australie, 12 points.
Australia! Et l'Australie, 12 points. Have fun tonight.
In the end, Guy and Australia finished in an incredible fifth place. A remarkable debut.
For sure. Fifth place was absolutely incredible and probably a higher finish than I expected.
Although it wasn't just Guy's result that mattered, who won Eurovision was almost just as important to Australia.
Sweden took out the win just ahead of Russia, which was another stroke of fortune for us. Here's Paul again.
After Guy, Krista Bjorkman said to me as we walked into a Eurovision planning meeting after they'd won, and Krista said to me, after Austria, we're going to invite you. Because once you've done it twice, no one can stop you. And that's the kind of friendships that we made on the way through and the people that believed in us. And as a result, we're still here.
So it wasn't just a once-off. Australia was invited again, thanks to our good friends from Sweden.
This certainly had fans talking. We were only meant to be a once-off. It was only because of the 60th anniversary. So now they were all like, why are you here again? Why are you still here?
To be honest, those questions were being asked by a lot of Australians as well.
2015 felt more like a novelty, so we almost had more to prove by coming back in 2016.
Yeah, coming off a fifth place, expectations were high. Anything less may have seemed like a failure.
It did feel like the very future of Australia at Eurovision relied upon what we did in Stockholm.
So whoever was chosen would have to carry that expectation.
To add to that pressure, SBS had Eurovision winner Conchita Wurst announce our artists at the iconic Sydney Opera House.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to announce the Australian entry for the upcoming Eurovision Song Contest. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Dami Im.
Dami had recently won X Factor Australia and was forging a popular career with a huge fan base.
Yes, we sat down with Dami and she explains how her selection came about.
We had seen Guy go before and Jess go as a guest artist the year before. You know, we were all familiar with Australia being a part of it somehow. After that, everyone, all the artists seemed to be talking about it, like who's going to go next year. And obviously everyone was, yeah, just like looking at and wanting to be chosen to go. And at one point I heard that an artist had been chosen and it was a really big name. We all just thought, okay, well, that's great. Maybe one day one of us can go. I left it at that. And, you know, we hope for a lot of different things and doesn't necessarily mean it eventuates. And then early 2016, I got a call from a manager and saying he did a big build up, like, you know, it's a lot of pressure and blah, 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 but do you want to do Eurovision? And I was like, what? Really? And they're like, yeah, SBS want you to go. I was like, oh, do you want to do it? I'm like, what do you mean? Do you want to do it? Of course I want to do it. So it was an immediate yes. And I was like, wow, like, what do I have to do? It just felt just crazy. Once I got chosen, the next thing was I needed to find a song. And really, really quickly, everything moved so quickly. I flew over to Sydney. This all happened like within a few days. Went over, listened, and I was like, this is nice. This is that, like, I mean, like, I wasn't super sure at the start, to be honest. Like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, nice. And then I recorded and was like, this feels pretty good. Feels pretty good. And it kind of grew on me. Keep coming.
Well, it's kind of funny that the song grew on her because I have to say it had to grow on me a little as well.
I think it was all about being a live stage performance, but we'll get there. Also, importantly, Dami, like Guy the previous year, had migrated to Australia with her family. Here's Dr. Jess to unpack the importance of this.
It was a real use of what I call strategic diversity, where it was about representing Australians who may not fit into the stereotypes that a lot of people around the world might hold of us, of the blonde, blue-eyed surfer type. So we had these representatives that actually showed more of that history of colonisation and invasion and migration. But it's also quite reflective of what's happening in Australian TV and music at the time, because when we look at those artists, the majority of them have come through those competition talent shows. And why the competition talent shows were kind of extraordinary was, despite all of the efforts that we've had to try and make Australian television more multicultural, when you look at our scripted TV at that time, it's changing a little bit now, a lot of that was still really kind of white and really kind of monocultural rather than multicultural. And then we had these competitive reality music TV talent shows come on, and you had to get in there on merit. What it demonstrated was that there's an incredible amount of talent in Australia, and they're from a whole range of communities.
Here's Dami on what it meant to her.
You know, being an immigrant and then becoming an Australian later, you know, in my teenage years, like, I always felt like, oh, am I really Australian? Am I Korean? Like, that, it was always quite confusing. But getting to represent Australia on such a level, such a stage, and like, it just definitely brought out that patriotism in me. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm Australian. Hello.
2016 wasn't just important to Dami in Australia. It was also important to us.
Yes, we decided to travel to Eurovision for the very first time.
Well, we figured this may be Australia's last time in the competition, and we weren't going to miss out on this occasion.
While we only had to worry about getting tickets and packing warm clothes, Dami's preparations were a little more full on.
Those couple of months from announcement till going over to Sweden were probably the most, like, craziest month of my entire life, because so much was happening. I had to fit in a lot of things, like, you know, from choosing the song, deciding the staging, like what it's going to be, to designing an outfit, then doing the announcements, doing press rounds around Australia, and then, you know, doing the global ones. It was just like every day there was something happening and it was something different. And it was just like really exciting and also like a bit overwhelming, to be honest. And you're going, oh my gosh, like, we're leading up to this moment, like a week of the actual Olympics, essentially. And then, like, the build up is just as intense. It's like, it's almost like a presidential campaign. And you're like, oh my gosh, like, counting the days and counting down every single day. And you just got to get it right. When I was going over to Sweden, going from Australia to Europe, it's like 24-hour journey. And on the plane, the whole time I'm thinking, oh my gosh, once I go there and when I come back, I'm going to have a number, and that number will follow me for the rest of my life. And that's really terrifying, because there's like 42, 43 countries competing, and you just don't know whether you're going to be number 40 or 10 or, you know, like, you just don't know.
Even on the way over, Dami was thinking about the results and pressure, and that was going to ramp up as soon as you hit the ground in Stockholm.
Even from the very first rehearsal, you know, there's so many rehearsals before the actual first semifinal. And I was told, you know, even before I left the country, like, okay, these rehearsals are just as important. It's not just like, oh yeah, I'll just see what happens and I'll just, you know, feel the stage. No, it's like, people are watching, global press are watching. And so it's really important to make an impression, because that will really affect how people vote in the end. So I was like, okay, got it. So I tried to perform at my best from the very first rehearsal. And, you know, it wasn't perfect. Like, we had to do a lot of tweaks after every rehearsal, but I made sure like every take, every run was impressive, because essentially like it was a performance for the press that actually really impact and set the tone for the rest of the Eurovision fans.
Well, Mike, we do know all about this. We've actually been on the ground doing this press coverage and analysing all those rehearsals, and we can certainly say first impressions really do matter.
For sure. We've seen some artists stumble in their rehearsals, and it's really affected their entire competition.
And part of this is having the right staging for Eurovision. Here's Paul.
The concept with Dami was one of the paradox of being lonely in an over-communicative world. In a world of social media, it's kind of created this world of loneliness. So Dami can't dance. She was on a box. Around her was this kind of futuristic world, and she was kind of removed and trying to talk to people through screens and things like that.
Discussing about the staging, and it came from Paul Clark. That was his idea, and he asked me, how do you feel about that? I was like, sure, I'm going to give it a go. Eurovision, you can go really out there, extravaganza, like fires and gymnasts and all that, or why don't we just go the complete opposite and just make people come to us, come to me, just focus. And I think it worked. It was like people had to tune in.
Dami's first big test was the semi-finals, so it was showtime.
It was also our first ever live Eurovision in the stadium.
Yes, you never forget the first time you walk into a Eurovision arena.
It's mind-blowing. The production is on an epic scale.
It was like sensory overload, like the size of the stage, the lights, the crowd. But even then, you really sense the tension.
Oh, it's a live TV show and a live competition.
In the semifinals, I was so nervous that I wasn't thinking. Like, intellectually, there was nothing. I was just like on autopilot. And we had done so many rehearsals, thank God. Otherwise, I would have blanked out. I was just like, just do it. Just my body knew what to do. When I performed at the semifinal is when I really felt like, okay, people really like this. They love my performance, and I was connecting. There was just that magical electric energy in the room. Couldn't deny it. It was so exhilarating. I loved it. And then I thought, okay, like I'm in the top somewhere. Like, phew, I'm not going to come 40th, you know, maybe in the top 10.
Well, thank God she rehearsed so many times. To think her mind was absolutely blank is terrifying.
But it certainly didn't show, because that performance in the arena was incredible.
Yeah, I consider myself very lucky that I was there to see that performance live.
All that preparation paid off, because she actually won that semi-final. She went into the grand final as one of the hot favourites.
To be honest, I think I felt less pressure once I got through to the finals. Performing in the grand final was super exciting for me. I felt really liberated, like we got here. And once I knew I finished the song, it was the best feeling in the world. I just felt like I didn't care what, you know, number I was going to place. I was just like, this was amazing. I love it. I love the people here. I love music. Oh, I love you all. I love Europe. And then the results come in, and that's when it gets serious again. Like, oh, everyone sit down, everyone breathe.
When we were in the middle of the voting and we'd won the jury by so far, the EBU had said to me, well, it's up to the audience now, but if you win, don't tell anybody where you're going to host Eurovision. Don't mention that tonight. It's just about Australia tonight. So their expectation was we were going to win it.
There were signs, I just didn't understand. They told me to keep my in-ear pack on. I thought, that's very strange. Like, why are we keeping our in-ear packs on? I thought everyone had to keep it on, but it was just me and I think Jamala, the winner. I should have known, like, something was up, but it was like, okay, I'm just going to keep this on. Yeah, and then we kept getting 12 points, kept having the camera facing us. It was like, what is happening?
And in the voting, it became so tense. And I had this kind of breakthrough moment and said to everyone in the green room in our team, let's not forget that we're in a reality TV show and that whatever happens, we have to be gracious. This is our first year in it, outside of being a wild card, and we're going to cheer for whoever wins. We don't know what's going to happen. If we win, we cheer. If we don't, we're gracious. We're Australians. We have to do the right thing. Everyone nodded. It just sort of brought us back to kind of reset for a moment, because I've never been so excited in a television show in my life. And as they counted down the votes, I thought, if we get to third in the public voting, we've won this. And we got to fourth.
But Eurovision is always full of surprises, and this year was no different, delivering a tension-filled climax.
Our 12 points go to Australia!
Australia!
Dami's Sound of Silence won the jury vote convincingly, but in a nail-biting finish, the popular vote saw our margin shrink.
It's Ukraine!
Landing a shock victory just ahead of Australia for Ukraine's Jamala.
Well, Mike, we watched that grand final in the Stockholm bar. It was a huge night of celebration, but a bit of heartbreak at the end.
Yeah, when those jury scores were coming through, I truly believe we might actually win it.
Alas, we were pipped at the post, and it was a bit of a messy night towards the end there for us. I even lost my beloved sash from Mardi Gras. But ultimately, we were left so proud of what Dami had achieved.
I think that sense of pride was felt by a lot of Australians.
The enthusiasm and the support that I got from Australia was just incredible. I got so many messages, from the Prime Minister, from the opposition leader, everyone was fighting to say something about it. So, I felt Taylor Swift, for 15 seconds, but it was incredibly, it got a lot of attention. And also the next morning I got up, I was the front cover of this magazine in Sweden. So I was whoa, everyone really watched this and cared about it. To me, Eurovision was not just a career-changing moment. It was a life-changing moment, because until then I was I've been doing music all my life, but I always thought, this kind of attention and this level of career is going to fade really soon. So I was always preparing to go back to my little, home life. And then after Eurovision, I was like, hang on a second, I'm going to stay. I'm going to decide what to do with my own career, decide my label, who I work with, my management, all those things changed. Eurovision just gave me that confidence and this eye-opening moment.
Not only did it cement Dami's career choices, her result also built a strong case for us to remain.
There was a sense that the result was incredibly important for any future participation. Here's Dr. Jess to explain.
I don't think we got to stay because we were just really good at it, but that does play a bit of a role in helping Australia find its sort of footing and its belonging in there. If Australia had been sending poor quality performances, then I think the conversation would have taken a completely different direction, because it would have shown that we don't have the respect for what the contest is and that we don't truly want to be a part of it. And I know that there are joke performances, or what we call joke performances, in Eurovision, but they usually come strategically and often from countries that have a fairly secure footing in the contest. Australia didn't have that secure footing, so it was utterly important that we make sure that the quality of our acts was very, very good. We needed to show that Eurovision audience that we had a particular identity and that we belonged to be on that global platform with them.
When you look at the media in Australia, you think about shows that have really been successful, and you think about things like Countdown, and that was about us punching above our weight overseas. We're so far away from the rest of the world, and we want to be validated. In order to achieve that Countdown kind of power of everybody caring, I felt like it was really important that we were good.
After almost winning in 2016, we didn't have hope that we'd be invited back. We expected it.
Yeah, I mean, how could the Ukrainians not invite us back after pipping us at the post in Stockholm?
Our invitations in 2017 and 2018 kind of felt like a formality, and solid results followed.
Isaiah Firebrace finished ninth in Kyiv with Don't Come Easy, our third top 10 in three attempts.
2018 saw things come almost full circle with Jessica Mauboy and her song We Got Love. She won through to the grand final, and despite being an early favourite, she did finish in 20th place.
And this is when cracks started to appear. What was apparent with both these entries is the European public weren't voting for us. Isaiah received just 2 points and Jessica the least amount of tally votes in the grand final.
This shook the confidence of fans in Australia, with questions being asked if we should even be there.
The country with the lowest score, with 9 points, is Australia.
What? The lowest score?
Yes, turns out while Australia's got love for Eurovision, Eurovision ain't got a lot of love for us.
It sounds like we were at a bit of a crossroads. After trying so hard to be there, maybe we were a square peg in a round hole?
On the next episode, Australia takes a different approach and hits some hurdles along the way.
And we answer the question, why is Australia in Eurovision and do we have a future?
I think once you come second in Eurovision, the expectations are incredibly high.
It sort of stalled a little bit in Australia for a couple of years.
There was a reignition of the love for Eurovision in Australia.
I think because we all kind of wanted it so much.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Dale. This podcast was created by us for SBS Audio with additional mixing by Max Gosford. Catch all the action from Eurovision 2024 on SBS On Demand, live streams, replays, official music videos, behind-the-scenes extras, and more.